You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. If you're an entrepreneur, a small business owner, or even if you have a side gig, let me introduce you to Grasshopper, the entrepreneur's phone system. Grasshopper lets you send and receive calls and texts from your new business phone number. That way, you can run your business from anywhere and respond to clients quickly with Grasshopper's mobile apps. Grasshopper. Sign up today. Go to grasshopper.com/kick to get $20 off your first month. That's grasshopper.com/kick. And now, enjoy the show. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. It's been a strange few months for the entertainment industry. Fall is usually the time when Hollywood's focused on rolling out big holiday movies and a buzz with awards chatter, but this year, the town is consumed by something much more sinister, a seemingly endless slew of sexual assault and harassment scandals that are ending careers, overturning entire studios, and calling into question why the proverbial casting couch has been tolerated for so long. Caught in the crossfire are dozens of movies and TV shows, and the casts and crews who've become collateral damage. In the wake of the very serious allegations against actor Kevin Spacey, Netflix is considering rewriting or canceling House of Cards, and they've already opted to not release the Netflix original film Gore, which stars Kevin Spacey as writer Gore Vidal. But one person who wasn't just going to lie down and allow the actor's misdeeds to ruin his hard work was director Ridley Scott. The four-time Academy Award nominee, whose films have included Alien, Blade Runner, Legend, Thelma and Louise, Gladiator, Black Hawk Down, American Gangster, and The Martian, had just completed his latest movie, All the Money in the World, which starred Kevin Spacey as billionaire J. Paul Getty, when accusations against his lead actor began to surface. With the film already in the can and a release date set for Christmas Day, Ridley Scott made the unprecedented decision to replace Kevin Spacey and reshoot all of his scenes with actor Christopher Plummer in the role. The result is a smart, action-packed film about the power of money to control men. And today, Ridley Scott joins me on the podcast to discuss the scandal that nearly sank All the Money in the World, the logistics that went into reshooting so much of that movie just 6 weeks before it opens, and the little something extra that only a Hollywood legend like Christopher Plummer can bring to a film. He talks about the real-life billionaire behind the Getty Museum in Los Angeles, why the richest man in the world refused to pay his own grandson's ransom, and what the oil magnate's heirs have to say about the film. Then I'll talk with actor Charlie Plummer about portraying Getty's grandson, who was kidnapped by the Italian mafia and held prisoner for 6 months. He talks about the unimaginable wealth and privilege that came with being a Getty, the creepiness of imagining what someone would pay for his life, and what it was like to reenact that gruesome moment when the real-life John Paul Getty III got his ear chopped off. Coming up with Ridley Scott and Charlie Plummer in just a moment. I'm I'm talking with Academy Award-nominated director Sir Ridley Scott. He's done a yeoman's work directing and then redirecting All the Money in the World. Ridley, thanks for sitting down with me.
Pleasure.
When you were first approached about directing this film, what did the name Getty conjure in your mind?
Well, you know, I'm of the age where I remember it loud and clear, and was, you know, 72 for me. I was born 37, so I'm, you know, I'm even 72. What am I, 30-odd years old? So it was very prevalent. It was very big news at the time. But also Italy was right in the midst of several, the beginning of these kidnappings that I think really affected Italy in a serious way in terms of people were afraid to go there. You know, I used to go to holiday in Sardinia and take my family there. And when I was there, somebody was taken in Sardinia into the mountains. So it actually affected the economics of Italy, I think, apart from anything else.
Really? I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah.
Kidnappings were kind of a thing back then.
Well,
this wasn't isolated incident.
There's some poverty, and there's some... The guys I'm dealing with are fairly heavy-duty, if you want to call them, a form of mafia called Calabrian. The Calabrian are a very untouched, undeveloped part of Italy. Pretty tough.
As I was watching the movie, I wondered to myself, who is the real monster in this film? Is it the kidnappers or J. Paul Getty?
Well, I think if you watch the film, I think you don't think at the end of the day he's a monster, but more an eminently practical man who is, I think, isolated by his wealth. Mm-hmm. You know, when he talks about it once, he talks about the abyss created by so much wealth, where he is separated from normal exchange. He's looked on as different, and in a funny kind of way, not exactly ostracized, but I think there's nothing, envy is an awful trait and an awful word. And so I think when people become very wealthy, it's very easy for them to become, the boat pushes out and they are no longer part of the normal community. You are no longer normal, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's one of the prices you pay for being that kind of, having that kind of wealth. So that, hence the scene, what you watch out for, where he describes wealth as an abyss.
Yeah, he reminds me a lot of Charles Foster Kane.
Yes.
This obsession with buying art and amassing objects.
Yeah. Well, I think more obsession, more a clever way of tax avoidance.
Oh, interesting.
Because if you do that, he first of all would be thinking about setting up various forms of trusts, where the trusts will, I'm not an expert in this, but the trusts will, to avoid tax. Evade tax is the illegal one, avoid
yeah.
tax is the legal one, where he's avoiding tax at the same time amassing this colossal amount of wealth through the scheme, but then he's not allowed to spend it. But that means literally spend it. But if he wanted to have something where one of the trust companies had to have a car or a plane, the company could buy those mm-hmm. things.
Okay, so part of his obsession with collecting and buying objects was a tax scheme.
Well, yeah, otherwise he'd be paying a giant amount of tax. At that point, didn't they have, in England, it was as high as 90%.
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous.
90%, so like you're saying, what?
Okay. Now, today when we think J. Paul Getty, we think the Getty Center and philanthropy. It's a very different idea of Getty than what we see in this film. Do you think that your film sort of sets the record straight in some ways?
I think it sets you, it makes you think, it makes you realize that this is not all bad news from this guy. This guy did have a view, even if it was driven, first of all, by, you know, avoidance. At the end of the day, he amassed so much that it should be turned into bringing some of that wealth. And already he was planning the Getty Museum, we see in the film, where he put all this wealth on display free, with free car parking. So at least that was the beginning of his philanthropy.
Yeah, I wonder, have you gotten any pushback from the Getty family about the movie?
Yeah, Gail Getty saw it.
She's
82. I haven't met her personally, but very much together, very much feels a sense of matriarch, and was, I think, my report on it was relieved that she found the film to be very good. And she said, although the old man was a little kinder than is portrayed.
Oh, really?
Yes. Because he was grandpa. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the word out on him and by what he would say in public, like, what would you pay for your grandson? He'd say nothing. When you think about it, that was a very modern attitude, because governments won't deal with terrorism. Mm-hmm. They will not negotiate with terrorism. So all he and you know, people who kidnap people are terrorists, and so he would not deal. So okay. He'd begin by saying, "Oh, nothing. It's not worth anything to me." Okay. So that immediately started, because if he had gone down there and said, "Okay, I'll pay $10 million," then the rest of his family, there's 14 grandchildren, would have had that. We would have opened up the doors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As everyone knows, here you are. You had the film in the can. I assume that you felt pretty good about it. Then the whole Kevin Spacey scandal breaks out, mm-hmm. and the allegations of sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. You know, scandals happen in this town, and sometimes they can generate even more publicity for a movie.
Yeah.
How immediately did it dawn on you that this scandal could sink the movie that you put a year of your life into?
Well, it came with a wave of other allegations, mm-hmm. both from right. the other side of, from the female side and the male side. So the whole world seemed to be opening up and using this as a window of opportunity for protest. And I think in most instances, it's completely valid and about bloody time. But, you know, it has been around for years, you know, as long as the film industry has been going. It's been always there because the industry has attracts a certain kind of individual, attracts a certain kind of person who's an ambitious actor or actress, who that's what they want to do. And when they want the job, the people who are in charge of it all are perceived as being, you know, the all-powerful, which of course they're not. You've always got that choice to say, no, thank you very much.
To recast and to reshoot a movie like this, it's almost something that's unheard of in the modern age. It's the kind of thing that old studios used to do and the stuff of Hollywood behind-the-scenes legends. Yeah. Did you get a kick out of the challenge and having to snap into action and save this movie?
No, to me, rather than the kick, it was we have to do it. This is a necessity. Mm-hmm. There's an investment here, a lot of money. I can't let that go. It's not my money, but it's my partner's money. I've got to fix it. Because I cast the person originally and was insistent that this would be the best person for the job. And here he was going to become a problem. So I felt responsible to a certain extent for that. So I said, I've got to do it. Let's do it. And here's your choice. We can do this and I'll be out as planned.
And how long did it take for you to get Christopher Plummer on board and to arrange all the shoots and everything?
About 4 days.
4 days?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
No, I mean, we're really efficient. Once you kick into what you're going to do, it just goes, boom. It's very efficient.
Wow. I mean, what kind of logistics went into having to reshoot all these scenes? Well, you have to get the locations, the actors back.
Yeah, you get everything together. You get everyone's on the phone finding out, are the locations available? Yes. What days could they be available? Okay. Who's available to shoot? What's Michelle doing? What's Mark Wahlberg doing? Can I get Kevin, Christopher? Etc. All those things come to bear. Then we collate all the information and put it together, and say, okay, we've got to be in there and out, in and out. By then,
I have to say that I'm just dumbfounded at how matter of fact you are about this.
I mean,
this would have put other directors in the nut house.
No. Yeah, that's true, but they shouldn't be doing the job. I love doing what I do, and I kind of sit with stress, bring it on, you know.
Now, when you approached Christopher Plummer, what did he say?
He and I want to work together anyway. Okay. I've always admired him, always. But something in recent years particularly memorable. I loved the part he played of Mike Wallace in The Insider.
Yeah,
a very good film by Michael Mann. And I never forget that. He was very powerful in that and very realistic in that. And I liked, in a funny kind of way, I like the Insider a lot because I felt that the Getty thing is a little bit like that. It's not exactly documentary, but it feels that way. It almost feels like, you know, a newsworthy, it's like newsy thing.
Yeah, I kind of got that watching this.
Yeah.
Just from a continuity standpoint, that must have been pretty challenging.
Yeah, but when I've got blessed with a great sense of geography and scene, and I don't know where it came from. I just have it, the evolution of how a scene should move in the and the geography, the, what I call the choreography of the scene, seems to come to me naturally. And once I get into it, I've learned to trust my intuition absolutely. So normally, it's pretty right, and I get in there, and that's what happens. And so once it was done, it's honestly perfect. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to redo it, I'm going to slot in stuff as I want it. I'm not going to redo the whole scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and you're going to make that decision. You make that choice. And of course, at the same time, I have to protect Christopher from. I don't want to show him what Kevin Spacey did.
Oh, interesting.
Not at all. And really? So, but I will protect him and make him feel and know that it's his investment. It's his character. Mm. He owns it.
Now, when you went from taking a relatively young man or a man in his middle years and aging him to yes. look old, when you went from that to working with Christopher Plummer, a seasoned actor in his late 80s, did that change how you directed the actor at all?
Not really. I had to young him up a bit because I got to go to 1958. Right. And then the story, real time, takes place in 1972. Mm-hmm. And so the earliest flashback was 58. So at 1972, he was already in his 70s.
Right.
And you know, Chris is in pretty good shape, a man 87. So,
oh, yeah.
Frankly, you get away with that. And so there was virtually no makeup involved at all. And it was uncanny because he almost seemed to have the physical view of being like Getty, except he's a lot more handsome than Getty was.
Right.
But nevertheless, he's roughly the same age, and the way he looks is kind of perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So the part of the problem only for me was making him look 1958, looking a little less, a little younger.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it would be a more logical and easier choice to just yes. have to make Christopher Plummer look younger for a few scenes rather than making Kevin Spacey look,
you know,
30, 40 years older for the entire movie.
3.5 hour makeup every morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have to wonder, given what you've been through over the past 6 months with this movie, what was more difficult, this movie or Blade Runner?
Oh, Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Blade Runner's murder. But, you know, I was against the wall then. I was the new guy. I'm not a kid. I was 43. I was a very successful commercial director.
Right, right.
So, and I'd already done Alien. I'd already done a film that won at Cannes. So I was master of my own universe, I'm afraid, so I didn't take any shit. And I think part of the problem was I gave as much shit as they gave me. And I think, but out of it came a very special movie. I knew it was special. The problem is they didn't know what it was. That was the problem.
And it seems like people are just starting to come around to really appreciating yeah. how great that movie is.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so
well,
many
I think
years
the
later,
remake, the,
it's been a process.
The remake, Denny did a great job on the next version. The yeah. evolution.
Well, before we go, did you ever get a call from Kevin Spacey or anyone
Not
on his
once.
Team apologizing?
Not once. Yeah. Shocking.
No one
really.
Said, hey, sorry, we kind of ruined your movie.
Well, shocking. Really? Well, yes.
Not an agent, a publicist.
Yeah, I was disgusted, frankly. That's why I said, you know what? Wow. No mercy. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Let's move.
Yeah.
And I just moved on fast because I should have had a call within a day.
Yeah.
And I was so pissed. Yeah,
I think that you made the right choice because I have to say Christopher Plummer is spectacular in this movie.
Yes.
And it is just yes. every bit as good as I imagined what the first version was and more.
Yeah.
The film, again, is called All the Money in the World. It's quite an achievement. Ridley, thanks for talking with me.
Thank you, man.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with actor Charlie Plummer, who plays the kidnapped John Paul Getty III in All the Money in the World, when we come back in just a minute. If you're an entrepreneur, a small business owner, or even if you have a side gig, let me introduce you to Grasshopper, the entrepreneur's phone system.
Grasshopper lets you run your business from your cell phone while keeping your business and personal lives separate. Choose from their huge inventory of local, toll-free, and vanity toll-free numbers. Simply forward your new number to your mobile phone and start taking calls immediately. Whether you're in an office, in your car, or out shopping for the holidays, Grasshopper's iPhone and Android apps help you stay connected to your customers. Not to mention, you can send and receive calls and texts from your business phone number, set up multiple extensions for everyone on your team, get your voicemails transcribed and emailed to you, work from anywhere with call forwarding to make and receive calls from your computer via the desktop app, and even utilize Wi-Fi calling. Better yet, Grasshopper offers easy and instant setup and 24/7 customer support, all without any long-term contracts. I've used Grasshopper for our podcast's 800 number, and they make sure everything runs smoothly so I don't have to worry and can focus on the important things. Grasshopper, sign up today. Go to grasshopper.com/kick to get $20 off your first month. That's grasshopper.com/kick. Charlie Plummer plays the kidnapped grandson of J. Paul Getty, John Paul Getty III, in All the Money in the World. Charlie, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, man.
Well, Charlie, I enjoyed you in Boardwalk Empire. That was one of my favorite shows. I just a few weeks ago, saw you in The Dinner, with another excellent performance. But in terms of the demands of an actor, this film seems to me to be probably your most challenging role, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't know. I definitely different challenges than I've ever had. A lot more painful experiences that this character has to go through than any character I've had to play ever. But yeah, very, very challenging in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and John Paul Getty III kind of gets put through the ringer in this movie.
Yeah,
I mean, the real life John Paul Getty III was kidnapped, chained up, kind of living like an animal, and of course gets his ear sliced off by his captors. What was the most difficult scene for you as an actor?
That was a difficult one, I think, for sure. Only because, I mean, of course, because emotionally and psychologically, that's a lot to go through. But also, technically, there was a lot that went into that scene, and months of figuring out the prosthetic and getting whole head casts done. And I think that also then just the day of having to apply the ear, which took about an hour and a half, and then doing the scene once, and then having to take that ear off and put the other ear on, and that taking an hour and a half. So I think that all makes it challenging. But then I was just talking about it, how on the day the Ridley had in the script, it was written that the ear starts to, you start to see it getting cut off, and then it cuts, and so you never really see my reaction or anything like that. And I think on the day Ridley had, I had asked Ridley, you know, do you want me to just keep going with it? Because that's very much, I mean, Ridley's very free with it, and just likes to see what happens. And so I asked him, you know, are you going to cut, or are you going to just see how it plays out? And he said, let's just see how it plays out. So so then I had to, in the moment, really think about how much pain that would, you know, that experience would have. And really, I mean, to wake up to that much pain coming from your head, and then to see the blood dripping and the fear, and of course, all of that, just how overwhelming that can be. So to have all that going through your head in about 10 seconds is a lot. And I think that was something that I've certainly never done before. And I don't know if I'll ever get to do again.
Yeah, the whole performance must be pretty emotionally draining, I imagine.
Yeah, it was. I mean, fortunately, I think what's so great, what I love about the film, is how much of an ensemble film it is, and so how it's cutting consistently, you know, from this storyline to the storyline. And so I had the space. I mean, there were certainly days where it was incredibly draining physically and emotionally, but then it was nice to have a few days off where Michelle and Mark were doing something.
Recuperate.
And so then to put it back on, and I'm sure they felt, although I'm sure Michelle, it was a lot more draining for her, but But yeah, no, it certainly was.
Well, I have to ask, have your parents seen the film? And did it freak them out to your mom to think about her little boy getting stolen from her and having his ear lobbed off?
It did. They did see the film, and I think it did freak them out. I mean, I would hope so, at least, because then... but no, I think so. I mean, I didn't, of course. I'm very serious about watching it, so, and it was the first time I had seen it, so... There was no talking during the film, but after it was over, my mom had tears in her eyes and stuff. And I don't know if that was because of the ear chopping off or because she was proud or I don't know. But yeah, I'm sure it had an effect on her. It's a pretty gruesome scene.
Well, yeah, your mom is an actor, right? And, and your dad's in the business too, so they must be very proud, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, they are. And they've been so supportive of me my whole career. And my whole family has, my little brother and my grandparents and... Really, everyone is so proud of me, and I'm just very fortunate to have them.
Now, what's it like to work with the great Ridley Scott? Is he a pretty demanding director to work with?
Not at all. Really? I honestly think Michelle was just speaking about how free the environment is working with him, and how loose it feels, and how there is, of course, you know, you are working on a Ridley Scott film, and for me, this was my first film of this size, and the first time I'm working with a living legend, and maybe, you know, one of the only times. So I think there was, of course, a lot of pressure, but he just makes it so light, and I think that just comes from who he is as a human being, first and foremost, and that's why, of course, the story is so intense and demanding for everyone involved, but I think he brings such a levity to it, and that just comes from him.
Having put so much time into this movie, what did you think when the Kevin Spacey scandal broke and you thought that perhaps this film wouldn't even be released?
Yeah, no, it was tough, I think, especially when so many people work on a film and for so long, and this had then been a part of my life for my whole summer, and it was such a beautiful experience, and I think whenever I have an experience like that, I want that to be showcased in the best way. And I think it was heartbreaking to imagine that would be taken all away by this one thing. So I was just so grateful for Ridley and for everyone who decided to get back on board with it and really fight to make it what it is now.
And I'm trying to remember if you have any scenes with J. Paul Getty Sr. in it. I felt that there might have been one in there. I couldn't actually
remember. Yeah.
Okay.
Which was also, you know, because... It was really kind of a watching from afar process because I really didn't have any involvement with that storyline whatsoever.
Okay, so you didn't have to go through the whole process of having to reshoot scenes with a totally different actor.
No, so yeah, good. Which, well, I mean, I'm sure that was quite intense. And I fortunately was able to just watch from afar and hope for the best. But I was so satisfied with the outcome. I'm so proud.
I have to ask, is there any relation between Christopher Plummer and Charlie Plummer?
Unfortunately, not that I know of. But
no.
Hopefully this will cause someone to go deep into someone's ancestry and track it back somehow. I hope so. I mean, he is such a talented human being. So
oh, yeah.
If there is one little connection, I'll take it and I'll run with it for forever.
Yeah, I mean, he is such a Hollywood legend. He's really part of a dying breed of the great old Hollywood studio stars.
Yeah.
Have you gotten a chance to talk to him much and talk to him about your craft?
I just met him for the first time today because,
oh, really?
Like you said earlier, I wasn't a part of any of the reshoots and this is my first time meeting him, but he seems, I mean... Of course, he is so talented, but it seems like he's such a kind person as well, and so generous and so thoughtful. So it's always just wonderful to see people that you've watched for your whole life you know, be that way in person as well.
Well, who are your role models as an actor?
My favorite actor in the world is this actor, Mark Rylance, who I saw in this play called Jerusalem back when I was 12, and that really inspired me so much and changed just the way that I thought about this business and being an actor altogether. And interestingly, Michelle Williams and I really bonded over that on this film because I was talking, she asked me a similar question and we were talking and he's also one of her favorite actors. And so we all talked about how we're just a part of that fan club. But I think he's certainly one and there's so many. I think that's what's so cool about being a young actor right now, like you're saying, these guys like Chris Plummer and younger guys and younger gals, and I mean to be able to be 18 and to get to work with these people, but to also watch them and some phenomenal performances. I feel really fortunate, but Mark Rylance certainly is one. And, you know, Joaquin Phoenix is one of my other favorites.
Oh, yeah.
There's terrific. A bunch. I could go on for a long time.
One thing that we hear throughout this film is no one understands what it's like to be a Getty, and the Gettys aren't like normal people. They have unlimited wealth and access that's so foreign to most of us. When you prepared for this role, what did you think about to get you in the headspace of John Paul Getty III?
Well, I mean, it is such an interesting life that he had, and a complex one, and one that seems so foreign to me and many people, I would assume. But I was able to read about him, and I think the interesting thing for him is that as a young person, when he was 16, you know, he's surrounded by all these people like Andy Warhol and Mick Jagger, and these people had really kind of worked to be where they were. And there's this interesting story that I was able to read about him, in which he got in an argument. This was actually the night that he got kidnapped. And this isn't in the film, of course, but the night he got kidnapped, he was in this argument. He was drinking, and he was fighting with this friend of his, and his friend said to him, and this is all coming from him, said to him, you know, you're nothing without your name. And that really hurt him so badly, because he did have this status because of his name. But I think, of course, that also brings the question of, if he didn't have his name, you know, what would he be? And I think for me, then I was able to kind of take that and then to take that one thought and to have a person be thinking that throughout 5 months of really being isolated, mm-hmm. what that does to somebody.
Yeah, and he had a tragic life even beyond this incident.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I think he died in his 50s. Mm-hmm. Do you think that he wished that he hadn't been a Getty?
I don't know. It's certainly not for me to say, but I mean, you're right. He did live a tragic life, and I think there was a lot of hardship in his life and a lot of suffering. And I'm sure there were many, many things about his life that were beautiful and worthwhile and he was able to enjoy. But you know, he did seem like someone who went through a lot of hardship throughout.
And as I watched this film, I just kept thinking to myself how weird it would be for me to try and quantify the value of a human being. Mm-hmm. But your character's grandfather, J. Paul Getty Sr., did just that with his grandson. Mm-hmm. In fact, he even tried to bargain for a better deal.
Yeah.
Did you find yourself pondering what someone would pay for you or what your life is worth?
I haven't, but now that you mention it, I mean, to everyone, I would assume it's different. I don't know if someone who doesn't know me at all, what that price would be, but I'm sure with my loved ones, my grandparents, my parents, it's priceless. And I think that for me, that's certainly how I feel. I think all life is priceless and so precious.
As a rising star, when you look at this film and look at what happened to J. Paul Getty III, is there any part of you that's sort of reticent about the idea of becoming famous and having to deal with that kind of pressure, having to worry about security and super first world problems, I guess?
Yeah, I'm really fortunate in that my family and my friends and pretty much everyone I try to be around whenever I, you know, have the choice to be around people, are people that really are grounded and I think have their priorities pretty straight in terms of what's important to them in life and what's not. And so I think that that will, whether I like it or not, will be consistent for the rest of my life. So whatever external circumstances are ongoing, I think that will always be at the core of who I am.
Well, before we wrap up, I wonder if a genie magically appeared and offered you all of the money in the world, but said that you have to be a Getty, would you take it?
In terms of, like, I'd have to be a Getty and I have to throw my whole life away and my family and stuff like that.
You'd have to deal with Grandpa Getty.
Yeah.
And all the problems of being a
Getty.
Would I get
to keep my,
but you get
my
to keep
parents
your money.
And all those, or no, it's a totally new family.
Oh, no, you're a Getty, I guess.
Oh, no way. No way, man.
Okay.
No, no, oh, God, no.
Okay,
no,
not
no,
even
not
for
a chance.
Billions of dollars.
No, man. No.
Okay.
I mean, if I just had to change my last name, then I think that'd be a different story.
Okay, let's say same parents, but you had to have Getty for a grandparent.
Okay. I love my grandparents.
Yeah.
Though. No,
okay,
no, I'm not moving. I'm not moving.
All right, not budging. All right, fair enough. Well, Charlie Plummer, I enjoyed your performance. It's an excellent excellent film. I see big things for you coming ahead. Thanks for sitting down with me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, man.
Thanks again to Ridley Scott and Charlie Plummer for coming on the podcast. All the Money in the World opens in theaters on Christmas Day. To find out more, visit allthemoney/movie.com. Ridley Scott's not on Twitter, but you can follow Charlie Plummer at Charlie F. Plummer. Today's episode was sponsored by Credible.com. Credible.com is an online marketplace for student loan refinancing. Using Credible.com's simple platform, it takes less than 2 minutes to find out if you're overpaying on your student loans. You could save thousands by refinancing. All you have to do is visit credible.com/kick, answer a few questions, and right away you'll get real rates, not ranges of rates, from multiple lenders. Checking your rates will not affect your credit score, so you really have nothing to lose. The average user who refinances through Credible.com saves almost $19,000 over the life of their loan. And for a limited time, my listeners will get a $200 welcome bonus when refinancing through Credible.com/kick. That's Credible.com/kick. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review. You can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at Kick-Ass News Pod. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and ideas at comments@kickassnews.com. I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.